You're listening to Radio Influence.
He got it in the white trunks.
He heard it.
That's beautiful.
Oh, God.
That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he forced the count.
Wow.
And here's Lucas Amici. And it's all over. It's
nice.
All over. First round knockout.
Big
is how Rich Franklin retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen happened.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
It's International Fight Week for the UFC, and we are going to preview this week's The Ultimate Fighter 25 finale and UFC 213 on this episode of the MMA Report Preview Podcast on Radio Influence. Daniel Galvan and I are going to give you our top five fights, which fighters could be on the chopping block, tell you which fighter that is greater than a 2-1 underdog has the best shot to win, which fighter making their UFC debut has us the most interested, and how the UFC has marketed Amanda Nunes leading up to UFC 213. Now, before we get into this week's UFC fights, I want to tell you about my sponsor, Fight TV. Fight TV is your number one source for all things fighting. Watch MMA, wrestling, and boxing live on the screen of your choice, phone, tablet, or TV using just the Fight app. Download Fight free today by going to fightfite.tv/radioinfluence/. Once again, that is fightfite.tv/radioinfluence/. And that link is also available on radioinfluence.com. Daniel, International Fight Week is typically one of the biggest weekends of the year for the UFC. But are you like me and don't feel that the fans are all in on this weekend? If so, who do you blame? The UFC for not effectively promoting the fights and the fighters? Or is there equal blame to share between the UFC and the fighters?
I would say 100, like a big portion of the reason why this International Fight Week isn't buzzing, doesn't have similar momentum, and doesn't feel super important, it is real simple, Jason. There just isn't that headliner main event to garner the eyeballs. And that to me is just the most important thing when we're talking about significant buy rates or events that get a lot of momentum heading into the actual contest. We may get a lot of post-fight buzz out of what takes place on the pay-per-view main card, for example, but heading into it, as good as Amanda Nunes and Valentina Shevchenko are as fighters, and as compelling as that fight is, it's as simple as there isn't that main event fight that casual fans will generate interest. Like, I would be very interested to look at obviously UFC 213 is going to do much better than the Bellator pay-per-view, but I would love to see the Google searches for UFC and the fighters on this card contrasted with the Google searches for the Bellator fighters, actually, because it just feels like there isn't a whole lot of buzz. It's a great main card on Saturday, Jason, but I wouldn't blame the UFC and the fighters as much as there just isn't a main event caliber fight there. So I guess you could blame the UFC because they haven't necessarily, they could have made that fight and they didn't.
Yeah, I think I would say there's equal blame because it is a two-way street. The UFC's got to effectively promote the fights, but the fighters also have to promote themselves. We'll get into that in a little bit. I think that for me, what lost a little steam off this card was losing Robbie Lawler versus Donald Cerrone. I think when this fight was on this fight card, I think there was a lot of comparisons to this fight card and what we saw back in May at UFC 211. But as I have, and I think both of us, we certainly see things that go on in the quote-unquote MMA bubble, but we also, because of what else we do, we kind of live outside that MMA bubble, so we maybe see things differently. But when you look at the MMA bubble, I compare this card, in talking about the main event and co-main event of UFC 213, a lot to UFC 209. And you remember, obviously the co-main event did not happen on that fight card, Tony Ferguson and Khabib Nurmagomedov, but everyone was talking about that fight. And, and leading up to that fight, there was this debate of, did the UFC make a mistake by not making that the main event over Woodley and Thompson? And as this week has gone on, I've had that same feeling that in the MMA bubble, everyone is all in on Yoel Romero, Robert Whittaker, which, by the way, is my number one fighter of the weekend. And I kind of feel like maybe the UFC dropped the ball a little bit here, and Romero Whitaker should be the main event of this fight card and not Nunes Shevchenko. It's not saying Nunes Shevchenko is not a great fight. It is a great fight, but I think when you monitor MMA social media, it just seems like 80% of the tweets about this card is about the co-main event, not the main event.
I think you can't go out there in main event. Well, you can do this. You can. Bellator just did it. But I would criticize putting a main event of a non-title fight over a title fight unless it's an absolute extreme scenario.
But the co-main event is a title fight.
Is it a title fight?
Yeah, it's interim middleweight title fight.
Okay, so it's not a title fight.
It's a title is on the line, which, yeah, I mean, let's be honest about it, because of the fact that now GSP apparently sent a text to Dana White and Michael Bisping saying, let's fight in November. Dana White, what was it, a week ago, says, look, you know, Bisping's going to get the winner of this fight. Who knows who the winner of the co-main event fights next?
Yeah, well, look, I've been doing digs all day long and twice on Sunday about the idea that Michael Bisping isn't the middleweight champion. I believe Yoel Romero is the middleweight champion, and Robert Whittaker is the rightful challenger. So I guess we can live in a scenario where this is a title fight. I so hate interim titles because there are so many titles in the first place. It's hard to keep track, and you add the interim, and it just feels like a conceit. But this is the type of fight where, to be completely honest with you, I think we're going to see the number one and number two middleweights in the world fight each other. You could make a case maybe for Rockhold or whatnot, but I would say Romero and Whitaker are my personal one and two when it comes to, like, I would pick them in fights against everybody else in the division right now. So that's true. But my larger point, Jason, is even this. Romero Whitaker, I'm not super sure would save this card in terms of living up to international fight week expectations. There's about three or four fights they could have done with fighters on their roster, if you also include Ronda Rousey, that actually could have returned to form, kind of the general idea we have. It's almost like the WrestleMania type weekend they've done at times. So I don't even know if Romero Whitaker would be the cure if you put that in the main event and you promoted it. It probably would have had a slight more attention for the pay-per-view, Jason. But the major problem is there isn't a grade-A superstar on this card.
You mentioned about Luke Rockhold. You realize the last time we saw a Luke Rockhold fight was when he lost to Michael Bisping?
Yeah. Yeah, and that's why I feel more comfortable as time goes on talking about Whitaker and Romero 1-2, just because we haven't seen him in a while. And it's kind of unfortunate because, like, it's absurd for Rockhold's talent level how many injuries the guy has faced. And I just hope when he returns to form, he is just completely 100% clean bill of health. And I understand that is just kind of an outlandish thing to expect. I mean, between the two fight cards, we'll probably have three fighters enter the cage that are feeling 95% well.
Now, in terms of the top five fights for both of us this weekend, to me, 1-2 is a no-brainer. There's not even a debate in my mind what 1-2 are. I've already said number one is Yoel Romero versus Robert Whittaker. Number two, no question in my mind, is the main event of Friday's The Ultimate Fighter 25 finale between Michael Johnson and Justin Gaethje. Who doesn't love a Justin Gaethje fight? I think that literally there's a 0.00001 chance this fight does not deliver. I mean, I expect a truly exciting fight. Going through the rest of my top five fights, number three, I have Amanda Nunes versus Valentina Shevchenko. Number four, even though their second fight absolutely sucked, it's still not number four fight of the weekend. Fabricio Werdum versus Alistair Overeem, a lot of that has to do with what it really is on the line in that fight. And my number five fight, there was, I think, a lot of fights I could have gone with, but I'm going to go to a matchup that takes place on Friday night, and this is going to be the lightweight matchup. These two guys, if you've seen the videos, they don't like each other, and that is Jakar Close and Mark Giakis, who, I tell you, I thought it was Diakis, but then I see all these videos, and it seems like the D is just very silent. But those are my top five fights, so what's yours?
Okay, I love that Mark and Jakar Close fight. That was actually number six. That one was just going to be good. And Mark Giakis is just really entertaining and has high upside. We don't really know how far he's going to go, and he's got great power. So that's a great fight. My fifth fight, Jason, Actually, I'm going to say fifth for last. Very similar to you with the top four, but I do have a little switch around there. Obviously, for me, number one is Romero Whitaker. But number two, you say without question, but I have questions, and I think Amanda Nunez-Shevchenko is number two. As great as Johnson and Gaethje is going to be, it is almost assuredly going to be more entertaining than 95% or all of what we're going to see due to Gaethje's offensive style and aggression and the excitement of watching him fight. I just think Nunez-Shevchenko is just a great title fight. Amanda Nunez has kind of established herself as the top fighter at 135. Her last two performances have been great. She's a phenomenal mullet. And the thing is, though, she has like an apropos great challenger here in Valentina Shevchenko that I'm very excited to see, because in the fight between Nunez and Shevchenko, Nunez went in, looked great rounds one and two, and as has been an issue throughout her career, her cardio got the best of her in round three. Shevchenko ended it strong. Shevchenko, since that fight, has looked great, submitting Juliana Pena. And Shevchenko, it's rare that we see a champion like Amanda Nunez be as dominant as she has been in those last two fights and then turn around in a title defense and be an even money fighter. That speaks to Valentina Shevchenko. Anyways, number four is the heavyweight fight, as you labeled. And number five, Jason, you cannot go with this fight, honestly. Gray Maynard versus Taruto Ishihara. That is my fifth fight, Jason. I'm all in on Taruto, except for not so much when we get to picking upsets here. But I love watching Taruto Ishihara fight, and that's why this is number five. I feel like Taruto is must-watch internet TV.
Oh, of course. Now, when I did see the betting odds on that, I was like, man, he's that much of a favorite?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I know it's been a bad run for Gray Maynard, but I was like, should Taruto? I mean, what's like? Let's see, like almost a 3.5-1 favorite. I want to say.
Yeah, it's hard. I'm probably gonna pull the trigger there on our picks because, well, Jason, the thing with Taruto is I'm not super sold on his ability to defend a takedown.
Well, I mean, look, he does train Team Alpha Male, so that's all they do, which very interesting. I was talking to Vince Murdoch, who trains at Team Alpha Male, actually fights on Saturday night in New Mexico for the King and Cage featherweight title, told me they actually have this competition called the King of the Mat at Team Alpha Male, which is all about whether you can take your guy down or whether you can stop the takedown. It's a point system, and apparently this is something they pretty much do every week there at Team Alpha Male, so we'll see how it goes there. But let's talk about the main event. And first off, I want to talk about the marketing of Amanda Nunez. And I watched the countdown show, and I thought the UFC did a pretty good job of kind of telling the story of Amanda Nunez. Talked about, you know when she came to Miami and now where she's at, where, you know, she now has bought a home there in the suburbs of Miami. But I think of outside the MMA bubble, and I do think a lot of people still know Amanda Nunez because of who, you know, she beat Ronda Rousey, but is that going to mean that all of a sudden, you know, 300,000 plus is going to be the buy rate for this one? No, I don't think it reaches 300,000 personally. I hope it does. I just don't think it does, but I think that the UFC just doesn't know how to promote Amanda Nunez.
Well, how would you promote her if you were the UFC, Jason?
Well, I think first off, don't you have to tell the story that she's the first openly gay UFC champion?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's got to be part of the story. Ronda Rousey was on Kelly and whoever the other guy is.
Exactly.
By the way, it was just an awful interview. First off, when it comes out initially that part of the stipulations of the interview, they couldn't ask her about her fighting career. It's like, okay, there's no reason to watch that interview. Kind of a cringeworthy interview, honestly, to listen to. But I was thinking about this, and I was listening to Brett Okamoto's podcast, and he kind of brought up this question about, you know, does, you know, Ronda appearing on Kelly Ripa's show, you know, help or hurt Amanda Nunez? And in a way, I think it could help her, because what happens if somebody's like, oh, I remember Ronda Rousey, she fought back recently, but she got knocked out. Who is that girl? And maybe they Google search Amanda Nunez. Maybe I'm just thinking way too much outside the box here. But, you know, it's still one of those things where Amanda Nunez, like you said, clearly is the best women's 135-pound fighter in the world. But I still think there is that Ronda Rousey cloud that lives over this division.
Yeah, that's just the transition of superstars. When you have a superstar, it is so hard to make that transition gracefully. You're going to be reminded of how, quote-unquote, blessed you were To have someone like that as one of your draws. Ronda was special for the UFC, and Amanda is a much better fighter, but just hasn't been able to translate. And there's so many different deals. Ronda is inspiring in that whenever I drop out of college, I will use the Ronda Rousey tactic to handling failure. When I return home, I will tell my parents, "You are not allowed to ask me questions about college and why I dropped out. I will now go to my room." So that will be my strategy. But yeah, it seems like she's handling defeat quite well. I will say that I don't know if the Kelly Ripa audience will necessarily translate to purchasing pay-per-views, but it's always good to be out in the mainstream and putting over the product, especially because, you know, her significant other is also on the card. I don't know if she talked about it or not, but maybe she did talk about Travis Brown. Probably not. Oh, I guess she talked about the robbery, right?
Yeah.
So we all know she got robbed. Stupid idea. Openly gay champion is a great way to market her because that is powerful in a sport that is so, you know, testosterone fueled as the UFC, etc. Like it's a man's man sport, and to go out there and be unique and be a trailblazer is something to be proud of. And to promote, I would go so basic with it for Amanda Nunes. I would assume, I have not seen the countdown shows, but I would assume they do a nice job of the deep levels of promotion when it comes to. A hardcore fan is going to watch this 60-minute or 44-minute show. They're going to do a good job of telling her story. To me, it's more about that short-term attention span, those 30-second spots that are going to be in front of the eyeballs of casuals, people who may not order this pay-per-view. And the way I would go about promoting her is the woman Mike Tyson, you know, the destroyer of worlds. She came in there and destroyed Ronda and destroyed Misha Tate. But Valentina Shevchenko is here to counter that. Like, that's kind of how I would promote Amanda Nunes, is about how violent her fight style is, how dominant her last two fights are, and if anyone can stop her. That's kind of how I would go about promoting Amanda Nunes.
All right, let me throw a little over-under number out at you here. So, you know, the countdown show, which, let's be honest about, when people watch that on FS1, that's 90% of those are probably MMA fans, UFC fans already. So, on the UFC YouTube channel, the full countdown show has nearly 243,000 views. Then they broke it down into, you can watch a 21-minute video on the main event or a 20-minute video on the co-main event. Romero Whitaker has 695,000 views on YouTube. How many views do you think Valentina Shevchenko Amanda Nunes has?
100,000?
244,000.
Yeah, I went really low on that. That is...
It's amazing how big of a difference that is.
Yeah. Those are the little things you can just point at. And I'm sure they used a super sexy picture of Yoel Romero as the screenshot, you know? So I'm sure that's what happened. But that is startling, actually, because it's almost to the same audience. And, I guess you've talked me into Romero Whitaker being the main event, Jason. It's the fight I'm most looking forward to.
You look at the marketing of Amanda Nunes, and I don't know the answer to this question, but did they put Amanda Nunes in non-traditional MMA media to help try to make her? I mean, because you remember, she has been a part of big cards throughout her UFC career. I mean, just look at, you know, last year of the cards that she was on. She was on UFC 196, which was, of course, McGregor Diaz 1. Then she was on UFC 200. Then she was on UFC 207, which I believe all three of those pay-per-views had all over 1 million buys. So she has been put in these big opportunities, but has the UFC been able to convert her into someone, a fighter that someone's going to go out of their way to watch? I don't think that's a question.
Well, look at Shevchenko.
Yeah.
At Shevchenko. I mean, she may have been at two straight Fox shows, and she's won both of them.
Yeah, and she's had great opportunities as well. You know, when it comes to the fight, you know, I mean, look, whether you listen to us break down this fight or a billion other people break down this fight, I think this is pretty much going to be the breakdown everyone's going to have. If this fight ends in the first 10, 12 minutes, it's Amanda Nunes. If this fight goes 25 minutes, Valentina Shevchenko is a new UFC champion. Would that pretty much be the accurate sentiment that's out there?
It's hard not to say that, given their first fight, given some of Nunes' struggles, even as recent as her last loss to Kat Zingano. That was an issue. Zingano returned to form later in the fight and got the finish. So that's kind of how it played out, Jason. And in this fight, to me, the pick is Shevchenko. I love her stand-up a whole heck of a lot. Amanda Nunes has great power, great finishing ability. If she brings down Shevchenko and maintains top position and rains down ground strikes, that is a dangerous, dangerous situation for Shevchenko. So it's easy to pick this, but I do think Nunes looks good early and Shevchenko returns to form late and gets a finish in the third or fourth round.
I'll play a devil's advocate here. One of the people keep mentioning, and look, it's a valid criticism, that, hey, if their first fight was five rounds, Shevchenko would have won. But here's the problem, Daniel. It wasn't a five-round fight. It was a three-round fight.
Yeah, it's a valid point. Shevchenko would be champion. I don't know if that will change things because it seems like Nunes is committed to this fighting style, which she should be because it's been real successful, where she really exerts herself to an extreme degree very early to put away opponents. And she may do that and get the finish. But regardless of her fight preparation, if she does go about doing that, it's hard to do that, Jason, and then not get tired later on, no matter how well prepared you are, if you commit that hard to finishing the fight that early.
If I told you Amanda Nunes has the fifth shortest average fight time in UFC history, would you believe that?
I would ask you, did you mean to say like women's history or
no, actually, UFC history.
No, I would not believe that.
Yeah, she is fifth shortest, and this is minimum five fights. Number one is Marcus Rogério de Lima, 2 minutes and 53 seconds. Ronda Rousey, number two, at 306. Three is Todd Duffy at 318. Four, Francis Ngannou at 435. And Amanda Nunes at 5 minutes and 10 seconds.
That is amazing. At 135 pounds, male or female, to be a part of that list. And especially because she had a decision fight against Shevchenko in the fight against Singana, went multiple, it went to three rounds. So,
yeah. Right, I mean, and my pick is Amanda Nunes in this one. And I think that what is ultimately going to be the key for her is I believe she gets this fight to the ground and she just beats up Valentina Shevchenko on the ground. Now, did see a stat where Shevchenko has gotten a takedown in all of her UFC fights. And this is a fight pick I have gone back and forth all week on, you know. I was thinking Shevchenko earlier week, but as I more thought about this fight, went back and watched that first fight. I think that Nunes is going to get the stoppage victory here. I think it probably happens late second, early third round by just using her ground abilities. And I think the other reason I my pick in her, with Nunes in this fight is I just think that, you know, she has evolved as a better fighter more than Shevchenko has since their first matchup.
Well, this is certainly the prove-it fight for Amanda Nunes. This is the fight where she goes out there and finishes Valentina Shevchenko. You look at the landscape of 135 and say, what's next? What could stop her? So this is a hallmark bout for Nunes, and I do think she fails here. Like I said, I do think Shevchenko will get the title. I think we'll get a third fight. But if Amanda Nunes does go out there and finishes Shevchenko, Jason, kind of moving forward, I mean, the UFC is going to have to promote her and do a good job doing so. I mean, who at 135 sticks out to you as like a potential future challenger for Nunes?
Maybe Raquel Pennington.
I mean, yeah.
I mean, that was going to be my next question is, okay, so whoever wins this fight, I think ideal scenario for the UFC is a very close Valentina Shevchenko win, and then they can just go right to the trilogy matchup because you look at the women's bantamweight division right now, there is not a clear number one contender.
Yeah, yeah. I think Raquel Pennington actually is the name. I think you may want to hold off on the trilogy fight, but you may be forced to. It's just that if you do a trilogy, these two fighters are basically the same age, and they're not in their 30s yet. So they probably will have four or maybe even five fights. It's been a very long time since we've seen five. But the talent level of these fighters, it's hard for them not to be like – the Frankie Edgar, Uriah Faber, Chad Mendes to each other.
By the way, why is Ronda Rousey still in the rankings? I mean, is she unofficially retired?
Have you seen her on Battle of the Network Stars? She's ferocious. Yeah, it's quite stupid.
Isn't that show like doing awful in the ratings?
Yeah, for some reason, Orlando Bloom isn't a ratings generator. I feel bad. Did the Big Three thing work out? Are people watching that show?
I have no idea.
Yeah, me neither. Oh, well. Yeah, I mean, if you – Ronda Rousey to me was the big market item on that TV show.
Yeah, I mean, the question is, what is Ronda Rousey's marketability at this point?
Oh, man, a YouTube social, I mean, a Facebook social media post right now, that is her general marketability. It's like you put her name in a Facebook post, it'll go viral. It's about how she got robbed, and you put it on your MA website, you get clicks. That's kind of her deal right now.
Yeah, I know. It's, you know, I mean, look, we're not, I would be highly shocked if we ever see Ronda Rousey step back into another fight.
Oh, I disagree, Jason. I really do. I mean, how can we watch this sport for the past 15 years and be shocked that anybody returns for a payday, right? Like, that's the name of the game, man. And she is not 40 years old.
It may but not it's got to be the right fight.
Yeah, it will be a fight.
You can't put her up, put her in there against Strucker. By the way, when I was watching the Countdown show, they did isolate the camera on Edmund. Head movement! And all I could think about was that animated video that came out after the fact where the guy was or the girl was hunting something.
Well, how bad is it, Jason, that in this pre-fight prep, I've been doing research to figure out how often, like I've been looking at social media, how many minutes has Travis Brown spent with Edmund in the pre-fight hype? Because if it's more than half the time, I'm going to pick out his opponent. Like, that is the big difference.
Well, Edmund will not be in his corner. It will be Ricky Lundell and Ray Sefo.
Yeah, no spoilers and picking, but that's a difference maker.
And I'll tell you, speaking of UFC 213, there's a couple of fights on this card that I was just like, could go either way. Brown Olenek was one of them. Because, and, you know, we were going to talk about fires on the chopping block. Clearly, Travis Brown is on the chopping block. He's admitted it this week. He knows he's on there. That was one of the matchups that I just looked at. I was like, oh, man, I don't know who to pick. Another one, Anthony Pettis, Jim Miller. And if you would have said that 3 years ago, you would have called me crazy. But, God, why do I see Jim Miller potentially just wrestling Anthony Pettis for 15 minutes?
Well, Anthony Pettis hasn't done much in recent years to – it seems like for Anthony Pettis, we've been looking at his peaks in his career and expecting that to take place, and it simply hasn't. The fighters he's lost to are absolutely great. Anthony Pettis is my pick in that fight, but Jim Miller's a live dog in that fight. I mean, even to go looking at that UFC 213 card, I know you talked to Rob Font, but that is a great fight against Douglas Silva Andrade, just because I anticipate a stand-up affair. Andrade doesn't have a lot of track record the past, you know, the past couple of years of how good his talent level is due to lack of fights. And that could even go back and forth. And Verdum and Overeem, you look at that fight, you know, at times you may fall asleep imagining what takes place. But I don't have a good sense of who's going to win that one either.
No, I don't either. I mean, my pick is Anthony Pettis as well. I don't feel confident about that pick. You know, Rob Font, when I talked to him, one of the things I thought was kind of interesting in what he said was that one of the things he's worked with a lot of boxing coaches for this camp, and he said the one thing is making sure you don't get into a brawl. I mean, that's a very good matchup. Of course, for fans who don't know, the Fight Pass prelims did add two bouts to this fight card of four fighters who are all making their UFC debut. Trevin Giles against James Bocnovich, who is a student of UFC heavyweight Ben Rothwell. Also, you have Cody Stamann against Tarion Ware, which, interesting, a little side note to that fight is they are both represented by Iridium Sports Management and Jason House. Kind of feel bad for Jason House on Saturday night as he gets two guys into the UFC debut on short notice. You know, it's a little tough for him. That is at 145 pounds. They are both bantamweights, and after this fight is over, they'll both go down to bantamweight. In terms of the chopping block, in terms of fighters who are competing on Saturday night at UFC 213, I have got two fighters who are on the UFC 213 card that I believe are on the chopping block, and that's Travis Brown and Daniel Lomachenko.
Yeah, I think those are without question the fighters. I think also, if you want to look at the Ultimate Fighter finale, I think there's an obvious fighter, right, that's on the chopping block here. Well, there's multiple.
I think there's three obvious fighters.
Yeah. Okay, so let's see if I got you with two of the three here. Jessica Eye.
Yes.
And Gray Maynard.
And CB Dolloway.
Okay, yeah, I could see. Yeah, you're right. It's been a very long time since we've seen him win a fight.
Yeah, I mean, it was his first fight since he in 2015. I mean, I think the only thing that maybe saves Jessica Ai is she goes down to 125, but she loses here, and I'm picking Aspen Ladd to win. And Aspen Ladd is one of the fighters that, to me, when it comes to fighters making their UFC debut, besides Justin Gaethje, she's probably the one that I'm most interested in.
Yeah, yeah, that's... I had her bookmarked with my actual pick. I had two fighters. She was one of them. If she goes out there and beats Jessica Ai, which I expect to happen as well, I think it's going to be a stand-up fight, and Ladd will get the better. I think it'll be a fun fight for sure. But if she does beat Jessica Ai, like, you look at Jessica Ai's last, let's see, one, two, you got, what is it now? I cannot count. You have eight fights if she loses, and she will only have one win on her resume. Granted, one of those fights was a win over Kaufman that got overturned due to, I think, pot or something, so that really shouldn't count. But she would have lost five in a row anyway to Ladd if she does lose, so that's why she's there. The fighter that I'm looking at for I'm most excited, non-Justin Gaethje. At first, I totally forgot that Jesse Taylor fought CB Dalloway and got Peruvian necktied. That was going to be my pick, but my actual pick will have to be moving back to that fight pass prelims in that featherweight bout between Cody Stamann and Tarion Ware. I'm going to go with Cody Stamann. He, to me, more than just fighting, like, I actually think he has a real personality and charisma about him. And this is a guy to watch out for when it comes to marketability, but he also is just simply good, really technically sound. And the Tarion Ware fight is the type of fight that could headline any regional show and be relevant and be a type of winner gets in the UFC type fight. So at featherweight, my pick is Cody Stamann, but Aspen Ladd is a solid pick as well, Jason. She could start off with a nice win in her UFC career.
And before we get into the co-main event, UFC 213, give our underdog that's greater than a 2-1 underdog that we believe has the best chance to win. I've got one fighter who fights on Friday and one fighter who fights on Saturday. On Friday, I'm going to go with Dracar Close. I was kind of surprised. He's plus 210 against Mark, so I'm going to go him on Friday. And then on Saturday, I think Jim Miller plus 200.
I like it. I like it. Jim Miller plus 200 is a good pick, and I'm kind of staying with you on Friday. There wasn't a whole lot on Saturday that I really liked, but I already kind of spoiled it in the beginning of the show. Gray Maynard at plus 275 is something I really, really like. I'm probably going to feel stupid. He's 38 years old. I'm going against our boy, Taruto. I understand this, Jason. I know he trains at Team Alpha Male, but I did watch The Ultimate Fighter, and I don't think all they do is wrestle. All they do is get in random, stupid fights with people. Yeah, that's what they do all the time, apparently. That season was very disheartening if you're a fan of Cody Garbrandt because you couldn't find the logic of his arguments. Regardless, I like Gray Maynard as my upset here, but Jesus, he is 38 years old, and that really, really, really concerns me when it comes to picking him.
And 1-5 in his last six.
Okay, you didn't have to mention that, but a former UFC champion and a guy with a chip on his shoulder, but a guy who, you know, Taruto is explosive. He can go out there and get a finish early. And Gray Maynard does not necessarily have the chin that gives me confidence that he won't get finished. But still, Maynard is my pick. And the other one I would look at, not one I would pick, but Andrade at plus 275 against Rob Font at UFC 213. I would not pull the trigger because I like Rob Font a whole heck of a lot. He's a real talent. But I think that could just be so close. When you have a potential stand-up affair, it's almost similar to a close heavyweight fight where anybody could get the proper shot and get the knockout.
In terms of The Ultimate Fighter, Cody Garbrandt to me came off so awful on that show.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's one of those things that, like, I think he was pretty well liked in the MMA community, but man, TJ Dillashaw came off so much better on that show.
It's like the case for why TJ Dillashaw left Team Alpha Male. You just show him this season. It's like, oh, well, duh. I mean,
that's a good point. Yeah.
I mean, like, oh my gosh. It wasn't just Garbrandt, man. Justin Buckles, the assistant coach,
yeah,
came across so weak sauce. Like, oh man, that was a bad look. I love the Team Alpha Male, guys. I mean, who doesn't, right? I mean, they are home to so many great UFC fighters, but they just looked like high school bullies.
Yeah, that's a great way to put. Yeah, it was just because I had heard that a lot of this show was basically going to be about promoting Dillashaw and Garbrandt, and it's unfortunate that fight's not happening this weekend, and maybe we'll get this fight sometime later on this year. But you know, I've heard Dana White talk about how this season was a success for the Ultimate Fighter, and it was a great season and all that, but can it be considered a success if there's only two fights of fighters from that season competing on the live finale?
Especially because there's a given context that these are skilled veterans or whatever. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, to me, success goes two ways. Three ways, actually. The first way, the way where you would consider it a failure for sure, is whether or not it produces UFC fighters. So far, you only have two fights and likely three fighters that will hang on afterwards. I think Krause wins over Tom Galecchio, and we only see the three guys there. Lima, Krause, Taylor. Two, ratings. I'm not sure what the ratings were compared to the last few seasons. I believe they were up.
Not much. I mean, it did decent numbers. But I tell you, like, every time a new season of The Ultimate Fighter comes around, you're like, all right, I'm going to watch it. And then you watch, like, the first episode or two, and then you just realize, like, just show me the fights.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I liked about this season, actually. There was a lot of Team Alpha Male nonsense, Jason. But a lot of the episodes was in, like, heavy investment in the fighters fighting for packages. Like, they really went heavy on that. There was a one episode where they did, like, a tetherball challenge that was a coach's challenge that was non-fighter related. But it was mostly, like, they spent a lot of time invested on it. It was almost like a UFC Fight Night countdown episode interspersed between Cody Garbrandt choking Dillashaw and the actual fight. And this was like, these are great stories to be told. The few stories I really loved were Joe Stevenson's story. I just thought that was a great story. And it really sucks that he's not very good anymore because he would have been, if he was
sad to watch.
Huh?
That was sad to watch.
Yeah. Especially against, he had two fights and they did like seven fights and then a comeback fight among the losers. And Hassan just destroyed him.
They should not book that fight.
Seemed kind of dangerous.
Yeah, and like, and I mean, for as bad as Cody came off this year, he was right on when he's like, "What are you doing to your guy?"
Yeah, well, he was the only. I mean, the thing with Dillashaw is he was the only guy he had available to fight because his fighters went 6-1 in the first seven fights. Like, that's the thing. This was one of the worst coaching jobs in terms of drafting and then actual success because I think Cody Garbrandt picked Seth Baczynski, and I believe Seth Baczynski recently lost to Jesse Taylor. I could be wrong there. And he picked Seth Baczynski first. And then he picked Baczynski first, and he matched him up with Gilbert Smith, who was Dillashaw's last-placed fighter, and then he loses in the first fight.
I mean, like, outside looking in going that season, to me, James Krause would have been my number one pick, and number two pick would have been Jesse Taylor.
Yeah, that would have been number two for sure. And then moving forward, you look at like Ramzi Needham and maybe even Diego Lima, maybe Seth Baczynski, but all guys who, other than Seth, that were on Dillashaw's team. And it's like, well, no duh, he dominated. I mean, in the final four, it was all Team Dillashaw with Lima, Galecchio, Krause, Taylor. And those are the only guys that are fighting on the show here.
Yeah, it just, you know, we'll see what the next season of Ultimate Fighter looks like. But we'll talk a little bit more about the finale here in a little bit. But let's talk about the co-main event of 213, Yoel Romero and Robert Whittaker. This is it's a great matchup and another matchup that I've gone back and forth on in who I pick in this one. And one of the interesting things about Yoel Romero, because when you think about Yoel, you think about just these dynamic knockouts, and you think about they're early on in fights. But if I would tell you that the only time Yoel Romero got a first round victory in the UFC was in his UFC debut in 2013, your response would be
liar. You absolute liar. That's impossible for a guy that violent. But you're right. You are
right. I mean, you look at it. You had the first round knockout against Clifford Stark. Since then, every other fight in the UFC has gone to the third round. Knocked out Hani Marks in the third round. knocked out Derek Brunson in the third round. A decision against Brad Tavares, knocked out Tim Kennedy in the third round, knocked out Lyoto Machida in the third round. Split decision win against Jacare Souza, and of course coming off that knockout win there against Chris Weidman back at UFC 205. Now, they do have similar opponents in this fight. Now, obviously, Romero has had a much tougher road to get to this matchup, but Robert Whittaker has a TKO victory over Jacare Souza. He also has a TKO win over Derek Brunson. That came in the first round, and he has a knockout against Brad Tavares. So there is some similarities here, but I'm picking Robert Whittaker in this matchup primarily based on the speed advantage I believe he's going to have in this fight. And I don't think he's going to be like Chris Weidman and try to have a wrestling match with Yoel Romero.
Yeah, I don't think so either. It's Whittaker every time, other than I guess the Rafa in a tall fight, since he went out and knocked out Clint Hester, every time Whittaker has had like an expectation raise on his performance, and he superseded that expectation. This has been a tremendous rise for Robert Whittaker. He continues to improve, continues to look good. And at 185 pounds, if you told me a fight played out entirely on the feet, there really isn't anybody I would pick against Robert Whittaker at this point. Romero, though, is the type of guy who may not have the technique, but Jesus, he's got lunch boxes, and those hurt. And that is a great equalizer, right? You may get outpointed, but you get hit with a huge flying knee, a huge overhand, a huge punch in close distance by a man who kind of looks like a Greek god mixed with other gods. If you look at his body recently, holy moly. He hits hard. He's incredibly powerful. Just an absurd athlete. And we haven't even begun to talk about his wrestling game, which his credentials are there. He hasn't gone out at times and dominated with the takedown heavy approach. It's been a lot of heavy punching, but he still has the wrestling in his tool bag. And that's why Romero is my pick here, Jason. Again, not a fight that I feel good about. These are close contests in our main event and co-main event. All you got to do is look at the odds to determine that. This is a phenomenal fight. Robert Whittaker hasn't given you any reason to pick against him in his recent performances, but Romero is my pick simply based on the performance he put on against Chris Weidman and the amount of power he has to go along with him more likely than not having the ability to control where the fight takes place.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how it does play out there. I think if you're UFC, you got to be hoping for a Romero win, right?
Yoel Romero is probably the more marketable fighter for sure, just because he looks like the Terminator and he fights like it too, right? Like he is a weird dude. I mean, he pooped in the cage, and that's like the fifth thing we talk about. That tells you how successful he has been. And I mean, granted, the fourth thing we talked about was like the anti-gay thing he did, but 1 through 3 are real positive. So let's focus on those. So yeah, Romero's probably the guy you want to make that Romero Bisping fight as much as Bisping doesn't want to.
Yeah, and you know, we'll see if ultimately that fight does take place. But I do, you know, it's such a great fight. At the end of the day, it's just such a great fight between those two guys. And you know, when Robert Whittaker dropped down to 185 pounds, I don't know if I saw title challenger in his future, but that's exactly what he is. I mean, that's what he's become. It's a great matchup between those two guys. In terms of the rest of the main card, Curtis.
Well, he didn't drop down, man. He went up.
Excuse me.
Yeah. That's one of the weirdest things we've ever. There aren't many success stories, right? Or is there, other than guys who are really late in their career, who moves up in weight and has this much success?
Well, it's like I had a question on Thursday when I put out about Gilbert Melendez, you know, officially dropping the 45 to take on Jeremy Stephens, and someone asked me, said, outside of Edgar, who has dropped down later at the tail end of their career and actually had success?
Mm-hmm.
That's a damn good question.
Yeah, it's a damn good question. And you know what the answer is? Is that if you suck bad enough to where you decide to change weights, you might just suck. Like, that might be the problem, Jason. Ain't what's on the scale, it's the skill level.
Yeah, it's just, it's you know.
Look at Anthony Pettis.
And the Gilbert Melendez thing, I don't quite understand that decision
mm-hmm.
of why he thinks that's a wise decision.
I guess potentially that, honestly, I mean, it's got to be the talent level of opponents. I think it's a step down in terms of talent level. So maybe you think you have success against, you're more likely to have success against the 6-10 of featherweight. Well, maybe he just wants to fight BJ Penn.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? I mean, and God knows, you know, BJ's probably going to get another fight.
Yeah, man. It's the worst, saddest thing in the sport going today. Other than, you know, whatever, when the next time Chuck Liddell fights.
God, you keep throwing that out there.
It's going to happen. I just wanted to tell you. It's going to happen, unfortunately.
God, I hope that doesn't happen. By the way, UFC 213, we have opposite picks on main event, co-main event. Oh, this might be a little breaking news here.
I feel very confident about your picks now.
The rest of the main card, got two heavyweight matches plus a lightweight matchup. We both already talked about the Pettis and Miller fight. We both taking Anthony Pettis. Blades and Daniel Lumpchuk. I like Curtis Blades. He's a huge favorite in this one. Kind of feels like a little bit of a showcase fight for him. Verdum and Overeem. I'm going Verdum. Not exactly too confident. And I know Verdum is thinking that a victory here is going to secure him a title shot. I don't know about that.
What do you think is the next title shot? Kane versus Stipe?
Yeah, if Kane's healthy, I think Kane's getting the next title shot.
I agree with you, man. That fight just is way more marketable than Stipe versus Verdum or Stipe versus Overeem. And I think that's the fight people want to see, man. It's the fight I want to see. So you got to wait in line. You know, maybe Derek Lewis will be right behind you in line. Who knows? Although he's got to do a whole heck of a lot to get back in line after his last fight. But I'm glad he's kind of back.
I'm telling you this right now. Once that Brown fight's over, I might just put some notifications on my phone of Derek Lewis tweets.
You got to just refresh the social media the entire time.
Because you know, no matter what happens in that fight, I have a feeling Derek Lewis is going to send out a tweet directed at Travis Brown.
That is like a minus 10,000 odds on that happening, Jason. That is going to happen. My pick, by the way, in that fight is Alistair Overeem. I like him to go out there and beat Fabricio Verdum. I mean, this is a fight where one of these two guys might just look really, really old in this one. And then Curtis Blades, I'm going to go out on a limb and pick him here at minus 740. I mean, this is a guy so many people like for good reason. He really got the short straw, Jason, in his UFC debut to get matched up against Francis Juanu. Things have changed. We now are aware of the talent level of Francis, and Blades is good. He'll probably look very good against Olmolchuk.
I tell you, you remember that second fight between Overeem and Verdum, how bad it was? And who would have thought after that fight that Verdum would go on to become the UFC champion? I think that ultimately that fight really, I think, showed Verdum that he just couldn't, you know, play that jiu-jitsu game. You got to trust your hands a little bit more. But I'm going Verdum there. So we've got a couple of different picks here, as I'm going with Nunez and Whitaker. You're going with Shevchenko and Romero. I'm going Verdum. You're going Overeem. We both agree on Blades and Pettis. Travis Brown, Alexei Oleinik. Did you just flip a coin like pretty much I did?
No, man. What'd you say about who's in Brown's corner?
Ray Sefo and Ricky Lundell.
Travis Brown's my pick.
Travis Brown is my pick, but would it shock you if he got submitted?
No, Oleinik is a scrappy veteran, man. You look up scrappy veteran and it translates to Alexei Oleinik. I'm just going to double check what country he's from. Translate to Alexei Oleinik in Russian or Ukrainian, whatever. Yeah, he's scrappy. He's a veteran. He's had about 5,276 fights. Great grappler. I just think Brown does not get taken down and outstrikes him. Maybe even, for the love of goodness, uses kicks.
When it comes to the rest of the preliminary card, how about Chad Laprise is a 6-1 favorite?
Well, this fight I think was set up for him to look successful. He has kind of taken a step down based on general expectations coming out of his season of The Ultimate Fighter, I think. And I think this is resetting for Laprise, and he certainly has the ability to be successful. And he's the pick for me as well. I mean, this fight to me is set up for Laprise to win.
I'm going Laprise as well. I am picking an underdog on the preliminary card, and that's Gerald Mershart. I think he submits Thiago Santos.
I totally agree with you. I came into this fight expecting to pick Santos, and then upon further review, you look at what Mershart's done in the cage contrasted with Santos. And, you know, Jura Mershart isn't a guy you think of at 185 as a dynamite middleweight contender. But he's highly skilled, and he dots his I's and crosses his T's. And there's more of a consistency, in my opinion, with his game and his ability to win. So he's my pick as well.
My sleeper fight of the night pick, Jordan Mean versus Bilal Muhammad. I think this fight's going to be a just stand-up war for 15 minutes, and I'm going with Bilal Muhammad by a very close decision.
Yeah, so I totally get what you're saying there with this being a great fight. Don't anticipate an Abu Dhabi-type matchup here. Anticipate back-and-forth striking. Anytime that takes place, it's always in the hand of the judges. Fortunately, I think I would think it's fair to say that Las Vegas has some of the best judges in the sport. I mean, they judge so many damn fights, they better be skilled. So Mean's my pick, but I think it'll be close.
In terms of the fight pass prelims, I'm going with the fighters that are all in the red corner. That would be Rob Font, Cody Stamann, and Trevin Giles. You know, but I would say this, James Bochnovich is someone I definitely would not count out there against Trevin Giles. That's another guy, if you're maybe looking for an underdog, maybe someone you want to play. What do you like there on the fight pass prelims?
Well, I like the same picks there, Jason. Like I said, Cody Stamann, a guy to look at for debuting. My guy, I think that could look good, but Tarion Ware, very skilled. Andrade Font to me is the fight that could steal the weekend. It probably won't because the attention will be on Romero Whitaker. But I think that's a great fight.
It was funny when I was talking to Rob, and when I talked to Rob, when we recorded the interview, it was when Cerrone Lawler was still on the card. And I said, I was like, so once your fight's over, I go, let's just say, you know, you have a statement, you know, you knockout, submission, whatever. Let's say it's in the first round. Is the next 5 hours like the longest 5 hours of your life? And he goes, yeah. He goes, it's a gift and the curse of being on a card like this to where you can go out and have an unbelievable performance and you might not get a performance of the night bonus.
Yeah. I mean, we should really do the research here on the amount of fight pass performance of the nights when you have a prelim TV and main card TV or main card pay-per-view, but it's gotta be rare. And Rob's the type of fighter that has a great chance of getting it. I mean, if you could bet on those, which you might be able to, Rob would be one of the heavier based on his odds. I would look at that for him to earn a performance of the night or fight of the night award.
Now on Friday night is the Ultimate Fighter 25 finale, headlined by Michael Johnson versus Justin Gaethje. If you have never seen Justin Gaethje fight, just tune in on Friday night. This guy is must-watch television. I don't think he knows how to have a boring fight. I don't know how much I like the fact of a fighter saying that he knows at some point in his career he's going to get knocked out. I don't know how much I really like a fighter being that honest about it, but Michael Johnson, you know, when you think about where, you know, the way we view him, but then you look at his record, he's 1-3 in his last four fights.
He is. And I think when this fight was announced, doesn't it seem like the general consensus? Actually, why am I speaking for people? Personally, when this fight was announced, I'm like, ooh, I can't wait to see Gaethje in the UFC. Ooh, that's a tough matchup. Michael Johnson has skills to put him away. He is 1-3 in the UFC in his last four fights. It is good for Michael Johnson that those opponents were Nurmagomedov, Nate Diaz, and Dariush. And prior to that, he went and pieced together victories over Barbosa, Gilar, Lozon, and Tibau. So originally, when this fight was made, I'm like, as much as I love Gaethje, I think Michael Johnson is going to pick him apart slightly and win. He's got a diverse, multidimensional game. But as you record this podcast, I've changed my mind, Jason. I think Justin Gaethje will piece together and get a win here. His offensive game on the feet is must-watch TV, as you said. I think he will overwhelm Michael Johnson early and get an impressive victory. Johnson is an absolute tough opponent, not someone to discount. But as we, you know, it's fight night today, and I think Justin Gaethje enters the UFC with the victory. But, I mean, this it's real simple. Like, his ability to go out there and finish just about anybody on the feet, and it is kind of uncanny. Now, this is the first time, Jason, he's fought somebody with the long Wikipedia article, but I still think he's going to have that type of success against Michael Johnson. Between the aggressive nature and his skill level. I think Gaethje will overwhelm Michael Johnson and get the early finish. What really worries me, though, Jason, in this fight is his striking defense and kind of the multi-dimensional.
You mean the lack of striking defense?
Yeah, he has none. And I love that you mentioned that headline, Jason. I saw it and I had the same thought. It's like, can I sell some Justin Gaethje stock the second he talked about how he accepted the idea of getting knocked out? Who the hell talks like that? Well, a freaking psychopath, but I love psychopaths. And Justin Gaethje, can't wait tonight to watch him fight against Michael Johnson. I feel like, just the way you talked about this fight, that I sense that you also have Gaethje as your pick.
Yeah, Gaethje is my pick. You know, the lead up to this fight has been fun. I love the fact of, you know, at the summer kickoff press conference where, you know, Johnson's trying to basically talk about how you've been in the minor leagues, and Justin Gaethje's like, well, I've been cashing more checks than you have. And I was like, he's true, Michael. He's been making six figures in the World Series of Fighting, you know, guaranteed six figures, not just, you know, that's win plus is show plus his win bonus. He's been guaranteed six figures. So I just, how do you not love a Justin Gaethje fight? And I think the way the UFC has booked Justin Gaethje here, to me, tells me he wins this matchup. They're putting him in a top five fight. And I think potentially Justin Gaethje is two wins away from a title shot.
Yeah, and I guess here's a dumb question. If you're the UFC, do you think it's smart to put him in a fight like Michael Johnson, or would you have matched him up against a worse opponent where it's more of a sure thing that he will look dominant in his first
performance? I would have given him more of a showcase fight.
And I hate to do the Ronda Rousey discussion one more time, but I was thinking about this last night. If they don't match her up with the Amanda Nunes, they match her up against a worse fighter, they probably get two Ronda Rousey fights.
Yes.
Like, I was just thinking about that. Like, maybe patience is a virtue at times. I mean, if we can steal, don't steal too much from boxing because then you'll get a bad decision. But
by the way, I was watching that Nunes-Rousey fight. I forgot how brutal that was.
Yeah, man.
Like, that was... on the countdown show, they break it down, like, in slow motion. And you're like, oh, my God. Like, the one point where she's, like, holding the fence and Nunes is punching her. It's just like, I mean.
Okay, I got a crazy idea, Jason. What if this was the commercial? You buy a minute ad and you literally only show the Nunes-Rousey fight in its entirety as a commercial. And then you put Amanda Nunes return to UFC 213.
That's how you should apply for a job at the UFC, Daniel.
I mean, like, how do you not? Okay.
Do you want to move to Las Vegas, Daniel?
Yeah. I mean, it's like weird. Like, you're giving away a pay-per-view main event for free all the time. But Jesus Christ, that is captivating as hell. You put that on TV. I mean, look, commercials, they're on and you don't pay attention. You put on Nunes Rousey for a random minute, I'm going to watch it. And I'm like, oh, you see, I hope someone's listening to this because I'm giving them gold.
The UFC should be listening to somebody for some of their marketing tactics.
Yeah, don't you wonder, like, what the hell are they doing, dude? Like, what is the meetings like? Because I assume the best in people. I assume everybody is working hard to do great things in life.
Come on, like, but I'm like, look at the UFC 214 poster. Am I the only one that just finds that poster odd?
Let me look it up. I have not seen it. UFC 214. Let's see. Is that the one where Jon Jones and the head and stuff?
Yeah, where, like, the way Cormier is in the poster, it just, to me, it's just so weird.
Okay, yeah, now I remember when there was the original. It looks, the one with the yellow thing?
Yeah, like, yeah. Cormier's, like, look, it just, to me, it's just a weird poster.
Yeah, man, I can't even read
it. Like, it's much more, like, if I'm Cormier, like, hey, I understand, you know, he lost the first fight, but if I'm Cormier, I'm going, Jones is clearly the centerpiece of the poster, the guy that you say you can't trust to show up on fight night. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, I don't know if you know this. John Jones is officially off suspension now.
Really?
DC did have a very good tweet about that, welcoming him back. And I'm sitting there going, and God, I hate to say this, but I am. It's one of those tweets that if somehow DC doesn't make it to July 29th, I have a feeling a lot of people are going to retweet in that tweet. It was basically saying, now show up on July 29th.
Don't ever do that if you're a fighter, man, because it is a damn lottery.
Don't tempt that injury bug.
Yeah. You know, Jason, there's a reason why UFC 214 has six main card fights. Okay.
No, there's no way. I think that's an error. Because, A, when you look at that main card, or the preliminary card, it still has Duho Choi versus Andre Feely, which is not happening. And first off, there's no way you're going to get six fights in a three-hour time frame with three title fights.
Justino Avenger's a title fight. So, they don't have an excess amount of time on pay-per-view?
No, not really, no.
Oh, yeah, no, that's impossible. You can't have three titles. Well,
I mean, look, I think Cyborg Avenger ends in the first round.
But you can't assume that. I mean,
you have to assume that they all go 25 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, so you're saying, so is Feely, you think, going to fight in that card?
It sounds like he's going to move to another card.
All right, so that's when you assume they put, like,
But look at that main card, though. I mean, you know, I joke about, hey, let's make UFC pay-per-views great again. UFC 214 is an example of making pay-per-views great again. Mm-hmm. So my expectation would be that when you look at the six fights they have listed, that Lamas Knight moves to the FXX prelims.
Yeah, who do you want to put on TV? The answer is Jason Knight. Simple.
Yeah, I mean, you could put Jay Manawan on Volkan Ozdemir. I think he very well could, but I mean, God,
but the winner of that fight's getting a light heavyweight title shot.
That's saying if Jon Jones wins.
If
Cormier Volkan wins, Ozdemir, you know they're going right to the trilogy bout.
No, Jason, nothing says money like Volkan in the champion. I don't care what happens. Ozdemir is the guy who you can do 2 million buys with. So.
But you talk about, you know, you look at, and I think this is a little bit of an issue I think the UFC has with Saturday's pay-per-view, is it is in the same calendar month that if someone can say they can only purchase one pay-per-view in the month of July, there's no way they're picking 213 over 214. No way.
Yeah. Yeah, no. It's going to be tough, man. The buy rate's going to be real interesting, and I think it's going to be real bad, which is weird for international fight week.
All right, over under 250.
Under, because I imagine like 225, but I mean that. But 225 to 250.
I'm thinking 250 to 275.
Okay, I could see that too.
I don't see it going over 300,000 buys.
Yeah, we really need to figure out a more scientific way of figuring out buzz. And what translates to pay-per-view buys, because
I will tell you this, I'm a little disappointed as we're recording this show. So they just opened up a Buffalo Wild Wings about 5 minutes from my house. Yeah. Right now it's not listed as a show, the UFC pay-per-view, which I'm a little disappointed, because also the thing that sucks where they put this Buffalo Wild Wings is right in front of my gym, and I walk out of the gym every afternoon and I go, man, that smells good.
Dude, the Buffalo Wild Wings that I go to is also next to a gym. Some kind of marketing tactic.
Oh, I'm sure. Well, where my gym is, we've got a Buffalo Wild Wings, we've got a Pizza Hut, a Tijuana Flats, a burger place, an ice cream place. Like, do they just think that, hey, well, these people just got a workout in them, maybe they want to, you know, get some food in their belly?
Nothing. Yeah, I mean, that's the American philosophy. Like, I guarantee you, that is what is preached at in business classes across America. Is Americans love them food, and they love nothing more than having a justification to eat it.
But I'll tell you, I have really fallen back in love with going out and watching pay-per-views at bars.
Is that because it's cheaper?
No.
I forgot.
First off, okay, so when I go out tomorrow night, if the place we're probably going to, it's a little bit more of a bar-y, clubsy type area. So you got to pay a little more for your drink. So, you know, Uber probably like $10.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to probably run up, you know, food and drinks, probably easily $40. I mean, you're probably still paying the same amount if you were to sit at home, or, you know, you're going to go over to a buddy's house and watch the fights. But to me, it's just like, I love to sit and observe to see how other people are viewing the fights and what they're saying.
Well,
because as a reporter, you can't get that by sitting on your couch.
Yeah, yeah.
Because because at the end of the day, 90% of the people you're going to interact with on social media are probably in the MMA bubble.
We need to rename our podcast to the Buffalo Wild Wings Mixed Martial Arts Report, because that's where I'm going to watch my fights on Saturday, I hope. My general strategy this past few times has been, if I have a pretty waitress, I've done this two times already because it hasn't worked out yet. But if I have a good looking waitress, you know, I'm a young man. I order, like, they have these wings called the Scorpion Defrum wings.
You talked about this. Like, you're crazy.
And they're hotter than the blazing. So my general idea is just to order them and be impressive. But thus far, it has not worked. No girl has been like, oh, that's really impressive. Here's my number. Like, that hasn't worked. I'm going to try one more time, Jason, for Nunez and Shevchenko. And who knows? Maybe it will work.
Maybe you should go in there with a tap-out shirt on.
I should go in there with a Conor McGregor fight kit. I can't wait.
That's my other thing. I have never seen someone out at a bar watching a UFC event with a fight kit or anything fire related.
Yeah,
ago, I mean, every time you went out for fights, you would see all types of MMA themed T-shirts, and you don't see it anymore.
Dude, how absurd is it that Tap Out and Affliction back in 2008 was the peak of MMA fashion? I thought that was
MMA bad fashion. You think about it, like it was the cool shirts to wear back in those days. But like you go back and see some of those pictures of those shirts, you're like, God, people wore that.
We need to embrace the brand of 2008 mixed martial arts, Jason, and like do a fashion shoot where we only wear Tap Out and Affliction. We need to get a deal with these clothing companies and bring make Tap Out great again. Like I had a Tap Out shirt. I had one. It was tied around my chest, and I didn't even have a chest, but I still showed my man boobs. So whatever, Tap Out.
But to me, it's always, I just find it fascinating to go out and watch MMA just to see how other people.
You like looking at other people. I get it, Hannibal.
No, it's just more of, at the end of the day, it gives me content for the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, really, at the end of the day, that's what it is. It gives me, because you just can't get that type of, people can't, who report on the sport, I think sometimes they have to put themselves in that type of situation to really see what people think about the sport.
Well, we can talk about Buzz all day long. But if what I did today was I woke up, I went to the grocery store, I came back and I spent my all 10 hours on the internet and I went to sleep, where the hell did I go to figure out if there was actual buzz? I mean, you got to go out to the real world with other people and look.
The best way I do it is my friends that I wouldn't call MMA fans, if they say, hey, let's go out and watch fights.
Yeah, I just get Tinder and ask.
And that rarely happens.
Yeah, yeah.
It's sad.
I mean,
but I will say this. Like, I hate that. I'm tempted to do this to one of my buddies and just text him and go, hey, man, you got to come over tonight for Gaethje Johnson. Because, like, there's no way. It's boring, right?
Yeah, but dude.
But then I feel like I'm cursing the fight if I do that.
Especially because that fight is going to happen after Tavares Elias Teodoro is a fight I'm looking forward to the winner. That may not be great for your casual fan because that could be a
boring fight.
Yeah. And I mean, the same could be said for Jordan Johnson, Marcel Fortuna. And Angela Hill versus Ashley Yoder, which is a fight I'm looking forward to because Angela Hill's really good. She's turned it around. And Jared Cannonier, Nick Roerich, if Cannonier doesn't get a first-round finish.
It scares me about Roerich, and I saw his manager post this on Facebook, the fact that he had to drop 21 pounds since Monday to make weight.
That's always rough, especially unfortunately it's at 205 and not like 145.
It just makes me wonder if that fight gets into the second and third round, could there be any issues because of having to cut so much weight taking this fight on less than a week's notice?
It almost assuredly there would be issues with that situation there. And speaking of great fights, dude, before Johnson Gaethje, Jesse Taylor versus Diego Lima may not be a fight of the year contender.
I think Jesse Taylor submits him.
I think it's a decision win, man. I think you look at this fight, and what do you think? Striker versus grappler. But Lima's showcased some wrestling in the Ultimate Fighter, so he's okay with the takedowns. It's just that Jesse's that much better. Taylor, for his own right, has been submitted a lot recently, so that's a concern. But I think Taylor wins, too. It seems like this whole season of the Ultimate Fighter should have been just named the Ultimate Fighter. Krause versus Taylor. Oh, crap, that didn't actually happen.
Yeah.
Krause is the other guy who's, like, great.
In terms of my picks for the rest of the card, I'm going close. Cannonier Theodoro, Johnson, Hill, Kraus, Dalloway, don't feel good about that pick. Ladd, Taruto, and Tisha Torres.
Tisha Torres, Maynard, Ladd, Dalloway, Kraus, Hill. Fortuna, Theodoro. Man, I don't feel good about that five pick either. Cannonier, Jai Keese or whatever. Jesse Taylor, Justin Gaethje.
You know, it's crazy, and we'll kind of leave on this note. When you think about Tisha Torres, who took this fight on short notice, she is currently the number five ranked title challenger at women's strawweight, and she is kicking off the Fight Pass prelims of the Ultimate Fighter 25 finale.
Yeah. Yeah. Coming off, she's literally 4-1 in the UFC, only has one loss. To Rose, Nama Yunus.
Is this a fight that she finally wins by stoppage?
No. Dude, no. I mean, why the hell would you say that? I mean, it may happen. Now that she's fought 9 times in her entire career and she hasn't got a finish. I mean, you know, you don't learn calculus after failing algebra. But who knows? She could do it. I hope so. Tisha's, dude, day one in Invicta. You watch her fight. You knew she was going to be good. And she's going to challenge for a title at some point in time in the future. I feel good about that. Juliana Lima's all right. Even with the loss, I expect her to return to the UFC. But a finish? I don't think so. And now that I said that, congratulations to Tisha Torres. But that's got to be in the back of her mind, though.
Yeah, but of course, the Ultimate Fighter goes down tonight. We're recording this on Friday. And of course, tomorrow night on Saturday, it is UFC 213. Of course, after both of these fight cards are over, we will have a post-fight podcast where probably myself and Daniel will probably have to admit somewhere along these fight cards how we were just totally wrong in our thought process, but we'll see what happens there. Of course, you can always listen to this podcast on radioinfluence.com. Also, subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, TuneIn Radio. Just search the MMA Report. Of course, you can give me a follow on Twitter at Jason_Floyd. Of course, I'll be putting out various stats and notes about the fights on Friday and Saturday night. Of course, also be sure to give Daniel a follow on Twitter at DanielGalvonDGG. So that's going to wrap it up for the preview podcast. We'll be back on Sunday for the post-fight show right here on RadioInfluence.com.
This is a Sitting Ringside with David Penzer. Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
Without further ado, I'd like to introduce my first Behind the Spotlight guest, NWA, WCW, and WWE referee, Nick Patrick. There was a little pay-per-view that had a little bit of a buildup. I'm obviously being sarcastic. It had about a year buildup, and it was the top WCW pay-per-view of the year, Starrcade. Mm-hmm. And there's been a question as to, as the story goes, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I wasn't in on all that backstage stuff back then. But I guess as the story goes, you were asked that Sting was going to go over, win the world title over Hulk Hogan. You were asked by Hulk. Right. This is the story. I'm not saying what you did. You were asked by Hulk to fast count it, to give him an out. And as the story goes, either your fast count wasn't a fast count by any standards, or somebody else got to you and convinced you not to do the fast count. Now, tell me, is that story correct? Is it incorrect? Tell me your version.
That's incorrect. What happened is the two people, Sting and Hulk, were the two franchise guys. And these two franchise guys were butting heads at the point in time over what was going to happen.
Sure.
And one guy came up to me and told me to fast count it because I was already doing, you know, to get some heat so he'd give him an out.
Right.
And the other guy says, don't fast count it. Just keep it nice and slow. And so the person that was in charge didn't want to make a call, didn't want to pick a side, and made themselves scarce all night long where I could not find them to ask them, hey, what do you want me to do?
Is this the first time you're telling the true version?
Yes, it is.
Did I get the exclusive?
Yeah, because I had to be politically correct because I was working for somebody every other time. You know?
Now you just don't care anymore.
No, I just don't give a dang anymore, man. I'll let it fly.
Sitting Ringside with David Penzer can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.